Good morning. Welcome once again to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Hearn, and with me today is Ben Maxwell.
Good morning also.
Hello. I could say good morning there. Usually I avoid saying good morning because one of our hosts, Tracy Erickson, is American, and for him, of course, it's the evening, but not today because he's on holiday.
It was his birthday yesterday, wasn't it?
Yes, he's having a birthday holiday. Did you say happy birthday to him via any social networking medium?
I didn't, and I hope it won't affect our relationship in future. Hopefully he can still see me as a professional colleague and a friend.
It will affect your relationship.
Yeah, it's started to affect everyone's relationships, hasn't it? You have to say happy birthday to people you don't even know, or they might not be in your social network anymore.
Have you ever been in a situation where you don't expect a present from someone, you don't want a present, but then still you kind of feel a bit hurt if you don't get one? And I'm not talking specifically about my birthday at this point, although I do feel this way around my birthday sometimes. There are certain people from whom I expect a present. It's not that I need stuff, it's not that I want stuff, it's not that I expect people to give me stuff, but then if I don't get it, it makes me angry. But more specifically, because I've just got married, the wedding list is a very strange thing. Before Susie and I got married, we contemplated the wedding list and just thought, we don't want this. I mean, we've got everything we want. If we want something, we buy it. We've lived together for a long time. We don't have, you know, we've got all the plates and the pots and all the stuff that people traditionally gave to young married couples to set them up in life. We've got bedding, we've got towels, we've got the lot. We've been living together basically as a married couple for all these years. For a while, Susie was going to get the wedding list just entirely charitable donations so that people didn't give us presents at all. They just gave...
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I very quickly shot that down.
I'm glad. I'm pleased.
Nobody benefits from that, Susie. Nobody. We don't benefit because we don't get any stuff, and nobody wants to do it. Nobody wants to give money to charity on your behalf. Like, people, you know, I'm sure they all give money to charity. They're all good people. I give money to charity, but not in that context. So we didn't go with that. Yes. Well, so that's that. That's what's been happening this week. It's Tracy's birthday, and that's why he's not here. He's off.
And, well, there's one other person as well that isn't here.
Oh, Rennie. Yeah. Yeah, him. He is up in Scotland, lugging boxes around for people. That's his other job. That's his other life, running a company called The Big Space. So that's where he is. He told me he couldn't work. He couldn't do the podcast this week. And he used a word, he used a term that we use with each other quite often, but I don't think it would be appropriate to use it in this podcast.
Oh.
To describe his predicament. So that's where he is, but he'll be back next week, and so will Tracy. But for now, Ben, let's get on with some news, shall we?
Indeed.
And the big story today, of course, if you're from anywhere that isn't America, is that the iPad is now available in shops. And if you pre-ordered it, you may already have it. You may have got it yesterday, as our news editor Mark Brown did.
Unless you're Joao, and then you won't have it because you didn't do it early enough.
Yes, that's right. He wasn't able to pre-order. Well, he pre-ordered for delivery a week from now. So even though he pre-ordered... he's getting it later than all of the people who just simply strolled into a shop today and bought one. Apple stores opened 1 hour early just to manage the influx of customers. The iPad is out. Obviously not all that interesting to me because I've got one. It's sitting here. I've been playing around with it for about a week now.
Not that interesting to me because I've fallen out of love with it already.
I'm falling back in love with it.
I think you were right then, probably about the personalization, isn't it? I am yet to experience one as my own. I've only seen generic ones.
Yeah.
Handed about, and it's difficult to get engaged.
It absolutely is. So that's the story of the iPad, this particular Pocket Gamer iPad, is that first Tracy Erickson bought it in America, then he sent it over. It was supposed to be coming to me, but because I was getting married and going on my stag do and doing all kinds of things, I thought, right, send it to John Jordan. And then in the podcast since then, you know, between then and now, I've fulminated against John Jordan quite often because, as I expected he would, he held on to it, and then I didn't actually get it we went to the Bath Pocket Gamer office about 2 weeks ago. It was there when from my wedding, when I got back from my honeymoon. And it just sat in the office for a couple of days. And I think the idea was for it to be a shared resource, but I very quickly decided that that was a completely pointless use of an iPad, because it does need to be a personal thing. And I wasn't impressed with it for those couple of days when I would just sit there in the office and pick it up every so often and just fiddle with it out of curiosity, like a chimpanzee in a Rubik's Cube. Just, you know, you don't really know what you're doing with it, but it's sufficiently different from the other things in your immediate environment that you can't quite leave it alone.
I can solve a Rubik's Cube.
I don't believe you.
I can. I've got one at home. I can do it. My fastest time is 1:08. I'm currently working on a different technique to get it to sub-30, because world records are much, much faster than me.
About 70, but, I think.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Wow, you're going to have to show me how to do that.
I will.
Okay, we'll do that. I've always been curious about that. Well, the iPad confused me anyway in a similar way. I would pick it up and go and do stuff with it, but what I thought was, this needs to come home. I need to be able to check my emails on it. I need to have my web history on it, things like that. And so I took it home, and since then my relationship with it has changed, and I was sort of down on it, and now I'm back up on it. I'll tell you games I've been playing later on, but I've been playing one particular game quite a lot. I've been gaming on it, and Susie, my wife, has been playing Plants vs. Zombies on it quite a lot. She, regular listeners will remember that she played Plants vs. Zombies a lot on the iPod Touch, and now she's moved on to the iPad. She's finished it already again, and she's liking it. We're both liking it. It's really good for sitting reading, like reading websites or iBooks came out. iBooks became available in the UK App Store, so I downloaded that. That's very good too. You get Winnie the Pooh free.
How do you feel about more involved games on the iPad? Because I think, in terms of gaming, it sounds like I'm sold that it can be a brilliant web browser, a brilliant reader, and everything like that, and a brilliant casual gaming device. But if you've got your iPhone in your pocket, you can whack out Drop 7 or Doodle Jump or whatever. But you fancy something more in depth, so you've got your PS3 or your DS or whatever. Where does the iPad fit in there? Do you think you would sit and play larger games on the iPad, or do you think you would always kind of revert to type and head off to the bigger consoles?
Well, the iPad is not a portable thing that you're likely to. You take it on a
quite.
Plane.
This is it. It's an odd middle ground.
You'd have it for a train. It's like a laptop. You'd have it on a train. You'd have it on a plane. I obviously carry my laptop around with me quite often if I'm on a train or a plane, because I, need it for working. Mm-hmm. I never play games on my laptop. With the iPad, I don't think I'd work on the iPad. But if I were going on a plane journey, I would probably rather I'd have the iPad with me over the iPod Touch. It's that kind of thing. But it's with both the iPod Touch and the iPad and my DS and any other handheld console I've had in my life, the reality is most of the play I give it is in my house anyway. So, at bedtime and stuff. And for that, it's really good. It's different from the iPod Touch, and there are definitely games on the iPod Touch that are still better. Like, I downloaded Jet Car Stunts. Mm-hmm. Thinking, because that's one of my favorite iPod Touch games. I really love it. Downloaded that on the iPad. It's rubbish because it's too big to use the steering wheel. Okay, so racing games are out. As far as
I'm quite heavy. Yeah, So this is my theory, that the more hardcore genres are going to be attempted a lot, and then maybe it's going to fall a bit flat. Because I can't imagine wanting to play real racing, tilting the whole iPad in front of me.
No,
you're going to have guns of steel, but it's not.
It's too heavy. It's too weighty. The thing about the iPod Touch is, I think I've said it before, it's just you and the game, because it's sufficiently light that there's nothing in between you, and what you're playing. With the iPad, it's definitely of a sufficient size that you're always conscious that there's this big, heavy, cold, slightly sharp-edged object in your hands. And racing games are out. Basically, it's a matter of going from genre to genre and seeing what works. I played Street Fighter 4, but it wasn't an optimized version, so the controls were kind of just basically where they would be on the iPod Touch, but on the iPad, so they were very difficult to reach with my thumb, and my thumb still obscured a lot of the screen. But if they were smaller and in the corners, then maybe that game would have worked better.
How did you hold the iPad to play it? Did you set it down? Was it on your lap? Was it at an angle? Was it in the air?
Held it up like a book.
And did it not become heavy? You know.
No. I mean, it's not like it would ever be like a shopping bag. It's not never going to hurt your arms. You're just conscious of it.
Yeah.
But you won't. I mean, it's definitely heavier than any other. It's definitely heavier than a PSP, or I think it is. It feels that way to me. And it's not just the weight; it's the size. So. I think, for example, if a PSP is as heavy as this, and I don't think it is, but say it were, it's less of an issue because there's no leverage, because the iPad is tall, so your hand doesn't go all the way to the top, so your hand doesn't support it all the way to the top. So the top of the device, particularly if you're in portrait mode, is exerting pressure.
Yeah,
because of leverage on the bit of your palm that's kind of holding it down. So that's another reason why you're conscious of the weight, because it's not just the weight, it's the size. Street Fighter 4, yeah, I don't know how well that would work if the controls were in a better position, to be honest. But the game I've played the most is Virtual Pool HD, and that is it's been available for the iPod Touch and iPhone for ages, and I've never downloaded it because I've always thought. I like the game. I played it on PC, but I thought the screen was just too small and it wouldn't work. And I didn't even give it a go, really, because it's like £1.20. But I saw it on iPad, and I think it was £1.20 as well. And it's brilliant. It's just great. So Virtual Pool HD, a game like that works really well. Stuff that doesn't work on iPod Touch works on iPad. Solitaire is really good. Downloaded a chess game yesterday. I haven't had a game yet. It's a nice little thing. The iPad, I'm coming round to it. The games that work on it, and obviously that's a very specific line that we're taking when we're talking about it as a gaming device, because a lot of people never play a game on it. But you should listen if you're listening with that in mind. But as a gaming device, all it is that different games work on it from the ones that work on iPod Touch. There will be some overlap, but games that worked really well on iPod Touch don't work as well on this, and games that didn't work very well on iPod Touch work great on this. So there you go. Those are my thoughts on the iPad. So let's talk about other news. That's the iPad covered. I think we've covered that. So let's talk about other things that are happening in the world. I did a post just comparing the different tariffs on iPad 3G. I know we're still in 3G, but that's potentially useful if you're sitting there today thinking about just toddling off to the Apple Store and buying an iPad, and you're thinking about getting a 3G model. Here are your options for tariffs. So let's see. We've got Vodafone, 1 gigabyte. A month is £10, 3 gigabytes is £15, and 5 gigabytes is £25. Vodafone seems to be the most expensive of all of them, like the lowest value, really, I suppose. O2 and Orange are very similar to each other. Orange is £2 a day, £7.50 a week, or £15 for a month. Or if you want 10 gigabytes a month, it's £25. So Vodafone is £25 a month for 5 gigabytes, and Orange is £25 for 10 gigabytes. So clearly, using mathematics, I can tell you pretty much straight away that that's twice as good value on Orange. And it's even more than that, because Orange gives you access to the BT Open Zone, which Ben and I have had a conversation about already this morning.
We have, yes.
But if you don't,
ignorant.
Yeah, the BT Open Zone is it's just, you know, BT sets up these Wi-Fi spots that you have to pay to get on. But if you have an Orange tariff, 3G tariff for the iPad, then you have access to them all the time. So that's quite good. So if you want Wi-Fi access instead of 3G, you've got a better chance of getting it. So Orange is, I think, fairly clearly better value than Vodafone. Let's go to O2. O2 is £2 a day for 500 megabytes. So that's slightly better daily price than Orange, and 10 and 15 for 1 and 3 gigabytes respectively. So that's about the same as Orange, and you get access to the BT Open Zone on O2 as well. And finally, 3, I think, is looking like the best value. £7.50 for a gigabyte, as opposed to £10 on the others. Orange is £7.50 a week, whereas 3 is monthly, and it's £10 on Vodafone and O2. And it's £15 for a 10 gigabyte, as opposed to 25 on Orange. So it's looking like 3 is potentially the best tariff.
It's a lot of money, though, isn't it, to add on to your phone bill and home broadband bill?
Yeah, but you've got options. If you have an iPhone 3GS with tethering, then you can, that turns your iPhone 3GS into a Wi-Fi hotspot with access to the internet. And if you do that, if you have an iPhone 3G and you also have an iPad, then you can use your iPhone 3G tethering to get online with your iPad. So you could, if you had a 3G model, or if you just had a Wi-Fi model and an iPhone 3G, and you were confident that it would always be together with you, then there's no need for you to buy the 3G model because you.
So then, not only do you have the world's most expensive solitaire device, you also have the most expensive modem to play solitaire online.
Yes,
which you can't do anyway.
Yeah,
brilliant. No, I'm sold. I'm getting one.
If I saw somebody, like, in Starbucks or something, tapping away on an iPad with a little iPhone 3GS on the table in front of them, working as a modem, I think I would have to get arrested.
It?
Oh yeah, yeah. Just walk.
Just
up.
Pour your coffee slowly onto their iPhone, making eye contact.
Yeah.
There we go.
It's the only way. It's the only way to deal with these people.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know,
it's the only way they'll learn.
And this is a potentially provocative remark, but I really don't. The Apple brand sort of makes me sick because it's one of those things that when you see people using an Apple computer, you can tell that they think they are the shit. You know what I mean? In a way that annoys me. It's what annoys me about brands generally, is that, you know, people associate things with them falsely.
Well, I think with Apple, though, it's because the Mac is such a good device when it comes to the creative industries, graphic design and you know, film editing and all that kind of stuff. So genuinely interesting, talented people have become associated with the brand, and then genuinely uninteresting, untalented people then want to be associated with that wave and have bought the brand because of it and hope that it just transforms them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the case. But that's for that reason. I would, if I had an Apple computer, I would do something to hide the logo, because of what I associate with it. It's a shame. There you go. It's just as bad in a way.
I've put an Apple logo on my PC.
What?
There's an Apple logo on my PC, on the back of my Fujitsu Siemens PC. I've got an Apple sticker, one of the big ones that came with my iPod, which I thought, I haven't thought it through entirely, but I think it's quite a subversive and amusing joke.
So you don't quite know. Hang on. Well, let me go through the options.
I don't know what it means.
Let me go through this. Yeah, okay. So, A, you are trying to pretend that you have an Apple computer.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not that. No, it's not that.
Okay, fine. So, B, you're making an ironic statement, but you're not sure what that statement is.
Well, no, so that's also not true.
Okay, oh, so there's a third option.
Yeah. By making an ironic statement, I know what it is. I think it's funny. I just don't know if anyone else does.
Yeah, but why? Okay, so tell me why it's funny.
I think it's funny because it's the reverse of the people who want to be cool with their Macs. So I have clearly a quite shitty laptop, and it's got a nice bright shiny Apple on the back.
All right. Okay.
You don't agree. See, this is the problem.
No,
this is it.
No, I'm begrudgingly, I'm saying okay.
Yeah, all right. Fine. Well, but as long as it's begrudging, I'm happy.
It needed to be explained, but yes. Once it was, I think that's fair. That's all right.
But you see, would people get that when I go and sit among them in Costa? I do this every weekend. It's part of my one of my entertainments.
Part of the issue is that even now, even after you've explained that to me, and even after having known you for some 2 months, I still think there's an element of that which is you associating yourself with the brand. Like some subconscious, deep down, it's you having that sticker is just you saying, yeah, I still, even though I'm making an ironic statement, and even though I don't actually own an Apple computer, and even though this ironic statement suggests that I wouldn't buy an Apple computer, there's still a little subconscious bit that takes some pleasure from being associated with the Apple brand. I put it to you. That's the allegation.
You put it to me. Yeah. No, I would deny this allegation entirely. I don't want to be associated with the Apple brand when it comes to big things, but I do when it comes to my phone. I'm very, very proud and happy of my iPhone, but I am vehemently against the constricting world of Mac and the inability to do anything with them. I build my own PCs. I want to be fully in control. I don't just want everything to look pretty and not understand what's going on underneath the hood.
Bonnet.
No, because you said more than 50% of our audience are American. So I'm trying to adjust my vocabulary to make them feel at home.
It's bonnet for them too. If I were in America and they were saying, hey buddy, lift the hood, I would be going around going, bonnet.
I know, and this is why you're hated
in America.
All across the globe.
This is why I'm hated in the colonies. I tell you what the iPhone is not good for, and that is being a torch. It does not sufficiently project light from my...
Oh, I've got to send a text to put... It might be too late.
It's okay, I've got a torch. Let's explain. Near our Bath offices, there is a wood, and in that wood, there is a path, and in that path, there is a stairway.
Dark house.
and down the stairway, there is only darkness. We had a look at it yesterday. We were afraid to go very deep into the darkness, and we tried to use Ben's iPhone as a light projecting device. Rubbish. The darkness entirely swallowed up the little light that the iPhone was able to project, so we're going back today with a torch.
And four men, because we were too scared with two.
Oh yeah, well, pretty light. Four
do
men.
We count as two men?
No, we don't. No, we don't.
One man split across two bodies.
Yeah, basically. But I would like to say that's about an 80-20 split in my favour. So let's move on to the next story, which is... So the iPad has already been hacked, has already been jailbroken. Mark Brown, our news editor, has already jailbroken his. And what this means is that you can do all kinds of interesting things with it. And one of the interesting things is that there is an HD version of Zod2D's SNES emulator app for jailbroken iPhones called SNES HD. And that's it, really. That's the story. If you're interested in emulation and the Super Nintendo entertainment system and you own an iPad, then you can download that.
Well, clearly you think I am interested in emulating things as well with my my Apple sticker, so maybe I'll look into that.
What else? Sonic 4 has... So we've sort of known for ages that this is going to be available on iPhone and well, potentially iPad, but certainly iPhone. We've known for quite a while. When it was first announced, the platforms that it was going to be available on were on Sega's site, and there was one kind of mystery one, but then some hackers worked out that the mystery one was iPhone. So it was kind of a badly kept secret. Sega finally confirmed that Sonic 4 would be coming to iPhone last week, the end of last week. And we've since learned that it's going to be coming to iPad as well. Both versions are going to be playable at E3 in a couple of weeks. And the iPhone and iPad versions are going to get to exclusive stages.
Wow.
So not only is it coming, but it's going to be the best version. It's going to be better than the PSN version and the XBLA version.
Wow.
Yep.
That's all I can say. Just wow.
That's all I can say, because I'm not really a
Sonic
fan.
No, me neither.
I'm underawed.
I've never, ever been interested in Sonic. Apart from Sonic Adventure and the Dreamcast. That was the first one, not the second one. The first Sonic Adventure and Dreamcast was amazing. But yeah, I've always been more of a Mario person. Even though I had an Amiga 500 and didn't play Mario at the time. But that
did
was
you play Zool? I expect you played Zool.
Yeah, I played Zool. I didn't really like Zool.
No, it wasn't very good. RoboCod?
Played RoboCod, did like it. And also James Pond, the one before RoboCod.
Wasn't keen on James Pond. I liked RoboCod a lot.
It's not as good because you can't extend your middle section.
RoboCod was quite unusual in that it was a game that I didn't think was good, but loved. It was just something about the colours and the lights and the sounds that it was just such a cheerful, well-meaning, kind of pleasant game that loved the world. And I just loved all the big sweets, and there's just something about it. I liked being in the world, but as I was playing it, I was thinking, this is very, you know, the level design is not tight. It's all quite shambolic, but still, I love it. And actually, the whole time that the iPhone has been out as a gaming device, I've wanted someone to do RoboCod. I've spoken to Manomio about it. I've said, are you going to do RoboCod? They didn't reply. but yeah, so what else was a good platformer? Parasol Stars? That was all right.
Yeah, Rainbow Islands.
Yeah, that was good. I mean, that was arcade perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah, and also New Zealand Story was fantastic. Really, really difficult, but very good.
I find that game very frustrating. But that was another arcade perfect port, I seem to remember. Rodland, that was a kind of cutesy one.
Pugsy.
Pugsy, I never played that, I think.
So you were a little, well, what looked like a brown pancreas sack type organ with feet, as far as I remember. And you kind of walked along. but it was, I remember it being very impressive visually. I only had the demo. I didn't ever get the game.
I don't remember that one.
It kind of been that good.
There was Blob. It wasn't called Blob, was it? It's called... There was something where you played like Putty.
Spots.
No, Silly Putty.
Oh, yeah, Putty. So, yes, yeah, that was good, actually. That was, and Cool Spot was another.
Yeah, was that Amiga? I thought it was just Mega Drive. Maybe it came out Amiga as well. Chuck Rock, there was a classic Amiga platformer. That was homegrown. That was all Amiga.
Chuck Rick Dangerous. Good.
Rick Dangerous, that was pre-Amiga days.
Well, yes, but the version I played was Amiga, and it was the superior version.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Although Rick Dangerous has always been... back in the day when I read Amiga Power, when it was being made, still, in my view, the best computer game magazine ever made, what I found interesting was how they started to identify unacceptable mechanics in games. And one of them was, I think this, after the Addams Family game came out, which is another excellent platformer, on Amiga, it used fire to jump. Which was a luxury that you didn't often get on Amiga because there was only one button. You could get joysticks with two buttons, but generally you only had one button as opposed to a SNES where you had two. Or more, rather. So with Addams Family, because pressing fire to jump worked so well, everything subsequently that didn't use fire to jump got slated by Amiga Power. RoboCod was one of them. Up to jump was like a standard criticism of platformer games. Which I subscribe to. I think up to jump doesn't work very well. Rick Dangerous was another one of the mechanics, or was the kind of poster child for one of the mechanics that was criticized, which is unavoidable deaths. Rick Dangerous was effectively a memory game where you went along, something killed you, and then you remembered it, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like, memory games are perfectly enjoyable, but it was kind of sold as a platformer, but in fact, in practice, it was a memory game.
Imagine if you could live your life that way, if life was a memory game.
Like Groundhog Day.
But progressing. So you could just choose. So maybe it would be a bit more like Prince of Persia. So you can rewind a bit each time you die or are about to die.
Mm-hmm.
You could do all sorts of interesting things, and you'd never have to worry about it.
Like Brave.
You could imagine all the gangs you'd stand off against. Gangs of hoodies in the street who are making a bit of noise, maybe with their phone, with tinny R&B coming out of their phones. You'd go up to them and say, "Excuse me, chaps, this sounds shit. Can you turn it off, please?" You get killed. You go, right, bad option. Rewind, and maybe walk past them, which is what I do anyway. So I suppose
I thought you were going to use that as like different ways of attacking them so that you eventually got your way. I didn't realize that after the first attempt.
I'm a quick learner. Yeah, I'd just leave it at that.
joke I was going to make is after 80 attempts, which all resulted in you dying, you'd realise it was a bad idea. I didn't realise it would be one attempt. But yeah, no, I'd be very much the same.
I'm a very shrewd person, Rob. You should know that by now.
Yeah, you know, something's not going to work out. I wouldn't even do the attempt. Well, that's that. Yeah, we just had a really exciting discussion about the evolution of the platform gaming genre, which will probably get cut. So there have been a few releases and announcements this week on iPhone and iPad, so let's go through them. Phoenix Wright has come out. That's all 5 chapters. So that's good. I apologise, by the way, if anybody can hear some banging in the background. I have a builder in my house doing things. Phoenix Wright has come out. It's got reviewed, and it wasn't reviewed terribly well. I think it got a 6. Broken Sword, Director's Cut, HD. That's good news.
That's very good news.
Now out. When we were talking before about things that work well on iPad, point-and-click adventures work brilliantly. And I'm passing this on, really, from Tracy. I had a quick go on the original Broken Sword, kind of up-resed on the iPad, and it was very good. But Tracy has played and reviewed a few point-and-click adventure games, and he says that that's one of the best kinds of games on iPad.
It's going to usher in a revolution and bring back point-and-click adventuring from the dead. Well, from the backwaters of the internet, anyway.
People keep saying that.
I'm going to keep saying it till it happens.
About the point-and-click adventure game, because it died. It really died in the late 2000s and in the
Grim Fandango was the last truly classic point-and-click adventure.
Well, no, because Broken Sword is since then.
No, because the second Broken Sword is really the last proper Broken Sword, because then Broken Sword 3, well, it was all right. I enjoyed it, but it was more of a third-person platformer.
But Broken Sword is newer than Grim Fandango, surely? The original, the first one.
No.
Google is going to back you
I'm
up.
On it. You go for Broken Sword, and I'll go for Grim Fandango. And we'll wiki it.
Anyway, I've still got other examples of games that have come out since then. The Longest Journey was a very well thought of adventure game. Broken Sword. Come on, let me win. Please let me win. Broken Sword. When did it come out?
Give me a year.
It won't. Hang on. It's 1996. Okay.
98 for Grim Fandango. Yep.
Okay, fine.
So I think we agreed I win your iPad and a copy of Broken Sword HD.
No one can see this, but I'm sticking my fingers up at you.
I can't see it either because I'm in a different room. So
yes, I know. Well, I said no one. Okay, well, Broken Sword anyway. Wow, 1996. I thought it was newer than Grim Fandango. In any case.
The Longest Journey, yes, I accept that as a counterpoint. But yes. Really, the Longest Journey did not get the same kind of take-up. It wasn't in the same... It wasn't considered alongside other genres. That was after the death of Grim Fandango, of point and clicks. And it's also...
I still don't. Well, point and click maybe, but because the control mechanism is different, but it's still, I would say spiritually, it's still the same. And I would also say Escape from Monkey Island is well thought of and in that genre as well, and that came out.
Yeah, but it's not the same massive AAA event, is it?
It was at the time.
You think about like when LucasArts brought out, say, Full Throttle, and it was incredible to be playing a character that used a bit of violence in this game, and it was revolutionary, and the visuals were beautiful, and the story was massive, and it didn't, you know, and that kept each new LucasArts release was like that up until Grim Fandango, and then that was that for me. That's the end, really. That's when it all started to tail off. Despite, obviously, other games coming out and some very good examples, I don't believe they were king of the castle.
I wouldn't say it's... For me, it's not quite as clear-cut as that. I think like the two Monkey Island games that came out after that and The Longest Journey... Longest Journey didn't create a splash, but I do seem to recall The Curse of Monkey Island and Escape from Monkey Island, both, particularly The Curse of Monkey Island, getting a lot of attention. In any case... I think we can all agree that the genre kind of dwindled, and there were a lot of people saying, like PC gaming is always said about PC gaming, that it's that it had died. And then there's been a lot of talk about it coming back on the DS and the PS, the PC, and the iPhone has been one of the platforms that people have said is the savior of the genre. And it's true that a lot of them have come out. So Beneath the Steel Sky and Monkey Island, Monkey Island 2 is coming very soon. Simon the Sorcerer is all over the place. Simon the Sorcerer 2 is out now as well. So it has been a good platform for bringing them all back. But I don't think that it's a platform that's going to affect the fortunes of the point-and-click adventure game genre. I think it's people. It's gamers. Because I don't think people have got the patience anymore in the way that they once did.
Well, then, no, I disagree. Because you've got games like Professor Layton's whatever adventure, which is much more slow-paced. And then there's the recent PSN release of the Blue Toad Murder Files, which, incidentally, is awful. But slow-paced again. And I think games like Brain Training and the new casual audience, this new influx of gamers, they're now in a position to rediscover what made point-and-click adventuring great, because they haven't seen it. They don't have the history. And so they can play the HD re-releases, and maybe there will be new ones in future. To be honest, I'm not actually bothered about new games coming out. I just want all of my favorites to be redone in HD. It's a very selfish motivation, I admit, but that's what I hope will occur.
Yeah, that's what I would like to see Grim Fandango for on the iPod Touch and the iPad, for example.
I would kill for that.
The old ones I want, but yeah. So yeah, but I would still contend that it's not the death of the genre is not down to it's down to people not being as interested or as patient. Even something like Professor Layton, it's not like Monkey Island. There are other elements to it that keep people going. There are kind of puzzle elements that keep people interested. But in any case, I think one thing we certainly can all agree on is that it is a genre for gentlemen.
Agreed. I would shake your hand if we weren't separated by a corridor and two doors.
Yeah. The only issue is whether gentlemen still exist in this world.
After you, Rob.
Let's just move on to the next story. Okay, well, that's good anyway. But, you know, having said that the point-and-click adventure genre is dead, the first two games I announced, Phoenix Wright, Broken Sword, both belong to that genre, so I'm probably completely wrong. Square Enix has released its iPad game, or has announced an iPad game. I don't know if it's out yet.
Squeenix, as you put it on the notes.
Squeenix, certainly. Yeah, I like to call them Squeenix. I've got a friend called Chris Hewitt, and I like to call him Chewit. I don't like to call him Chewit. I never do, but other people call him Chewit, and I think it's quite neat. Chocobo Panic, anyway. Chocobo. Never played Final Fantasy, but I gather it's some kind of chicken creature.
Well, it's like a giant ostrich chicken dodo thing that you can race on and farm.
Okay.
And there are small ones as well, obviously.
Now they're creating a panic, an iPad.
Yes, yes.
I think it's got something to do with corralling them and things. Splinter Cell has arrived, Splinter Cell Conviction, the delayed iPhone version of the game that came out on console about a month ago, or a bit longer, is out and got a 6 from us.
As a publicity stunt, they should one day release a Splinter Cell with no publicity and just sneak it out without telling anyone.
Yeah, they should do. I thought it was quite funny that Splinter Cell, like all games, arrived on the New Zealand App Store first, so we had a good 12 hours advance notice. And in my head, I had this image of Sam and Max trying to sneak towards us, fully visible for 12 hours, and how ludicrous that was. But it was meant to last.
Sam Fisher.
What did I say?
I think you said Sam and Max, but that's good. That's a gentleman's mistake.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just obsessed with point-and-click adventure games.
Yeah.
Sam and Max, another game which obviously that genre is still alive, although now crap. Trucker's Delight has got an iPhone game. I hadn't heard of Trucker's Delight, and then Ben, you showed me the
I'm
video
talk
last
about
week
that
in the
in
office.
Games I've been playing. It's
Sick, sick game. Sick.
But sick video.
Sick video. Yeah, I haven't played the game. It's apparently not very good. John Jordan reviewed it over the weekend.
Well, I will contest that later
oh
on.
Dear, oh dear. Well, yeah, cause some controversy forthcoming then. But the video I can tell, I can't tell you anything other than the game seems to be some kind of Outrun clone, and the video that inspired it is revolting. Like genuinely in a way that I didn't, when I watched it, I wasn't thinking, that's cool, that's funny. Like, and my taste barrier is pretty open. You know, I never flinch at South Park. At no point have I ever thought the people who make South Park have gone too far. I watched Chris Morris's Peter Geddon episode of Brass Eye without blinking.
Nonsense.
Yeah, there were bits where I thought this is going to offend people, but at no point did I think he'd cross the line. This Trucker's Delight video, I thought it was a bit sordid. I was just watching it thinking, oh, I don't know if I think this is just disgusting.
Well, you know, it's a music video by a French band.
Yeah, but it's horrible. Basically, it's got a cartoon guy in bit pixel art, and he rapes a woman. And it's about the whole thing is about him trying to rape her, and then she's trying to escape. And at the end of it, he gets the better of her, and she fails to escape, and so she falls onto his penis. Genuinely, I'm not someone who gets offended easily, and I wasn't offended, but I just thought, this is horrible. This is not a nice thing that someone's made. It's not funny. It's not offended. I wasn't offended, but I was. I just thought it was shit. But there you go. That's just me. What did you think of it? Did it?
The video. I'm the same. The content seems a little suspect, but the all the allusions to old games are fantastic throughout it. And there are some genuinely funny bits in there. Yeah, that climatic scene is maybe a little bit cheap shock, but
the whole thing made me uncomfortable because it is effectively it's about him. It's about the pursuit of a rapist.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. and Jeremy Clarkson got into a lot of trouble for saying that truckers were murderers. So now clearly Flair's allowed to say that they're all rapists as well.
Yeah.
But he's got a good handlebar moustache. Makes it up.
It's really good.
Yeah.
So that's that. Ben's gonna advocate on its behalf later on.
Not on the video's behalf or rape. Let's be clear. Just the game.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what you've got to say. Steam Pirates. Luke Bernard's iPhone game. Much anticipated. Luke Bernard is a kind of enigmatic indie developer, and he's made a game for iPad and its iPhone, and it's out now. Steam Pirates. It's probably quite interesting. The review will be up soon. Karate Champ, bit of retro fun there. It's already out, and it's getting a split-screen iPad version, multiplayer.
Split-screen?
Yes, so you'll have the iPad in between you, and you'll each be playing on your own little half of the screen.
But seeing the same... Is it just a beat-em-up?
Yeah. As a link, we're also getting an iPhone version of Bruce Lee Dragon Warrior, which came out on iPad already.
Really quite good on iPad.
Yeah, had a quick go. Seemed all right. What did you get? Got 7 out of
10? Got 7. John was considering an 8, but it wasn't quite there. Yeah. But, everything we've just said about at the beginning about hardcore genres, it does work quite well. But again, I still think there'll be arm tiredness.
I think... games like that, I'd probably the whole time I'd be playing it thinking, oh, it's fine, but I wish I had a control pad, which I never think when I'm playing virtual pool. I at no point do I think this would be better on another platform.
Yeah, but that's the slidey controls work; they suit something like pool a lot better. Whereas you want deadly accuracy in a fighting game, and I didn't really feel like I was completely in control when I had a go.
No, yeah, exactly. Prince of Persia: Warrior Within is going to be delayed till June the 3rd.
Good. Hope they delay it forever.
Yes, and Warrior Within is the full game. It's coming out on iPhone, but it's the full Warrior Within game that came out on PlayStation 2, probably in about 2005.
The one that undid all the good work that Sands of Time did.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
That misunderstood everything and just went back to cliched rubbish.
Jordan Mechner wasn't involved in Worry Within, but he was involved in Sands of Time. So that's possibly where it went wrong. Yeah. Jordan Mechner, of course, being the originator of the franchise. And one of the first games I ever played was a Jordan Mechner game called Karateka on the Apple II when I lived in Hong Kong. Some good trivia for you there about my past. and another game came out this week which I thought was very interesting called Orify, which is a game which you play entirely through sound. No visual input is necessary. I'll talk about that more later on when I talk about the games I've been playing, because I have indeed been playing it. But now we can go to the rumor mine. Let's go to the rumor mine. Have you got a metaphor for us?
No, but I went down while you were talking. I'm already here.
Jesus. Then how can I hear you? How can I hear you all the way up here?
The yogurt pot with the string that you're holding. I'm on the other end, another yogurt pot.
Oh, shit. So I've been licking out of that. I hope that the noise hasn't transmitted all the way down. See, you said you had no metaphor, but here we are. We're in a metaphor right now.
Yeah, we found ourselves in a metaphor. And it happens all the time.
Yeah. Not only are we in a metaphor, but we're also both now in the rumor mine.
Rimmer. Rimmer.
Ah, clever. I like the way you Sam and Maxed it down to without anyone noticing.
I don't know what that means. What is the verb to Sam and Max?
Well, it's now an in-joke, and it's to stealth.
Oh, I see. Very good.
Yeah, it would have been.
Because I didn't realise it's an in-joke that kind of insults me, so I wasn't quick to get it.
Sorry, it doesn't insult you. It's nice.
Oh, right. Okay. Why don't you give us the first of the rumours then? Why don't you tell us
the first of the rumours? Okay, that multitasking on iPad will allow apps to run side by side on screen. So it would almost be like, I don't know, a laptop. So you could have more than one program running and switch without having to switch between them, because you've got screen acreage to take up space. And obviously the split screen thing has already been shown in lots of games, so it can clearly handle running that kind of process. But you know, I don't really know a huge amount about the guts, what's under the bonnet of the iPad. So you know, if this does come to pass, maybe there will be some apps that you can't do simultaneously, and it could be limited, because I know that multitasking on the iPhone is going to be somewhat limited to certain functionality. How many do we think is going to happen? Is it just going to be two running at the same time, or are we talking more than that?
I think it'll be unlimited, but it'll only be possible with certain
apps. Certain ones. And maybe they'll have to be limited to you know, keep ceilings low.
Yeah. So the iPad is certainly powerful enough to run the kind of apps that the iPad runs. It's got a gigahertz processor and separate graphics, I think.
It's memory, though, isn't it? That's what counts most here.
Let's have a look. Let's see how much memory it's got by going on the Apple website.
How did you get 3G down in the room of mine?
It's just I've got a very impressive dongle. Features of the iPad. Come on, give me your specs. Give me your specs, Four Eyes. Tech specs. There we are.
Specs are harder to find these days. No one cares about them anymore.
Well, they're here. It has battery and power. It's got processor gigahertz, processor is the memory capacity, 16 flash drive, There's nothing here about RAM. How annoying. Well, there we are. Anyway, it's got power. That much we know. It has a certain amount of power. If the rumor miner is correct, that amount of power will be put to good use, having two apps on the screen at once.
Or possibly more.
So let's see what else the rumor miner has been saying. Let's have a look. I'll take this next one. He is saying that Blur, the game, racing game named after a Britpop band, is going to be Activision's next iPhone game. Activision has already had some success with Call of Duty World at War, which we talked about previously. And this is the next one, the racing game. So that's something to look forward to. Racing games can work quite well on iPhone and iPod Touch. There's a slightly depressing precedent in that Split Second wasn't very good recently. And I think it's generally true that games that came out on other platforms and then had their own separate iPhone versions don't tend to be as good as ones made especially for the iPhone, like, for example, Jet Car Stunts and Real Racing. However, Need for Speed was very good at the end of last year, so, you know, maybe it'll be all right.
Well, and this one as well, Split Second wasn't... I don't know who the dev team behind it were, but Blur is by Bizarre, who've done Project Gotham Racing, which is an amazing series. But I don't know if they'll be involved at all in this, or whether it's just going to be farmed out to an external developer to port. We shall see. But, you know, it could be good. I haven't found many racing games I'm interested in on the iPhone.
Have you played Jet Car Stunts?
I did, yeah, and it made me want to play Stunt Car Racer, but it didn't fill the void in my soul.
There is a game called Stunt Car Racing.
I know,
and it's much closer to Stunt Car Racer, I think.
Well, it's side on, and it's
really
not. Yeah.
Oh, I got that wrong. Jet Car Stunts is. What are you talking about? Stunt Car Racer is fine for its time, but if you try and play it now, you'll just vomit on your lap.
No, it's brilliant.
You'll go, why is this so jerky? Why am I getting one frame a second? It was all right in 1993, but
one frame a second is all I need to beat those opposing drivers.
It's a great game. I wish Jet Car Stunts had more of what. I wish it was more like Stunt Car Racer, but given the choice between the two, I'd always take Jet Car Stunts because it's new and fast and playable. But it's ludicrously hard. And finally, we've got in the rumor mine, Prince of Persia: Warrior Within was delayed, which we've already learned, until the 3rd of June. And the reason it was delayed is to avoid a conflict with Prince of Persia Classic and also Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell Conviction. So Splinter Cell Conviction is another Game Loft game, like Warrior Within. And Prince of Persia Classic is coming from Ubisoft. So the rumor is, this is kind of a business rumor, isn't it? It's about Game Loft saying, hang on, even though we've got Warrior Within ready to release, we're not going to release it this week because we don't want it to lose sales to Splinter Cell, and we don't want it to compete with Ubisoft's Prince of Persia game. Both obviously coming out to capitalize on the Jake Gyllenhaal film. We can leave the rumor mine already.
That's it.
Let's go.
I mean, we've already proven we're not very good at going into dark places alone, so, well, you know, the two of us. So it's probably best we don't stay down here for too long without a torch or other people.
Yeah. Engage metaphor. lift pickaxes. leaving the rumor mine. We're going kind of cold on our faces. Metaphor
Black,
concluded.
Blackened by rumor.
Metaphor concluded.
Nice.
So we're out. And so now we're talking about what we've been playing. Before I do, actually, let's just mention the Developer World Championship that we've got running on the site. Parallel to a certain footballing competition, which is happening in the world right now. It is, yeah, so football competition in which countries from all around the world are taking part in order to potentially win a cup. R1 is parallel. It's what you need to do is you need to go to pokegamer.co.uk and look it up. They'll be easy to find. And you just vote for your favorite game and the country it comes from. And then every country will have a game representing it. And then we're going to go through rounds of the competition and eventually crown, presumably, Australia, the prize, the cup. Give them the cup. Not really Australia. Basically, vote for somebody, and you could have your national pride stirred by having a game from your country win the Pokegamer Developers World Championship. So get on Pokegamer and start voting.
What we've been playing?
So what have we been playing? What have you been playing?
I've been playing Trucker's Delight, which is a game I've found surprisingly enjoyable. It's not a racing game, although it does look exactly like a racing game. So it takes the portion of the trucker chasing this woman from that video we were discussing earlier, and you have to go after her a Ferrari in your truck. The controls are really good. So you've got you tilt to turn the corners. Acceleration is automatic. You just go. There are checkpoints to meet. It's got the lovely pixel art style of the video, which is one of its redeeming features, despite the content. And there's a kind of nice animation. The Flares band provide the music, and you just have to ram this girl's Ferrari over and over again. And so it kind of, it's a little bit Outrun, a little bit Chase HQ, but more really than a racing game, it's a survival game. So I guess all arcade racing games in their own way are survival games, because you're always trying to get to the next checkpoint and see how far you can go. But this one is all about the score, and perhaps is comparable to games like Doodle Jump in a way, in that you are ascending or traveling down a route and trying to get as far as you can each time. And I'm having a competition with Zhao to see who can get the biggest score. At the moment, I think I'm in the lead. I sent him a text. He hasn't responded, which I hope means he's upset that I've beaten him. So I got $3,888,100. And there are various power-ups on the way. So you get a bullhorn, so you can ram people without being slowed by them, like other traffic. You get Mr. Slurp, which is one of the things that happens in the video, and I'm surprised it's in the game, where a stretched Humvee full of women occurs, and you have to tap on all of them, and your tongue goes across, and you lick them all. You lick them naked. Their clothes burst off in an oddly violent animation. And then however many you get becomes your multiplier for future points. And then there's a third power-up, which is ridiculous. It's a turbo, or a Mr. Boost, I think it is. And your back doors on a truck open, you get an afterburner, and everything speeds up. You go really fast. But also, the Ferrari speeds up, and the clock speeds up. So it becomes in no way beneficial to you. You just go through part of the game a bit faster, contextually exactly the same. But that's the only bad thing, really. I like it. It's got a lovely menu system. I think the reason I like it is because of all the retro references, and I love the art style, and the kind of the beginning of the intro reminds me of Full Throttle, as well. That kind of open deserty bit.
Okay, so you contest John George's verdict?
I contest his conclusion that it's a bad game as such. It's certainly a bad racing game, but I think it's an enjoyable game. But you can't think about it in the context of a racing game. But obviously, John's right and not me, because he's got years of experience in various magazines.
He knows his shizzle.
It does. But it's for me personally, I've enjoyed it quite a lot. It's a really easy pick up and play game, because of the auto acceleration, you're just tilting. You don't have to use any buttons unless you want to lick the hen party girls. And yeah, it's nice.
Good. Thumbs up then.
Thumbs up. 6.5 out of 10.
6.5. All right. And anything else? Any other games?
Not really, because I bought Red Dead Redemption for my PS3, and it's taken up all of my time.
Oh, will you shut up about Red Dead Redemption?
Never.
All he's done. Listeners, all Ben's done for the last several days is talk about Red Dead Redemption.
I've got more things to tell you in the car when we go to the office as well.
Oh, God,
I did more stuff last night.
Can't wait. By the way, Ben, you have to go in the boot on the way to
work.
That's
okay. I'll bring the yogurt pots.
Okay. Well, Red Dead, it sounds like a very good game. I've been playing God of War 3. And while you were talking...
Oh, would you shut up about God of War 3?
But it's
listeners,
so...
all he's done is tried to tell me about God of War 3.
When it's I've so awesome. Something. There's massive... At the moment, I'm having a fight with... what's he called? Oh, I can't remember what he's called. But he's huge. He's massive. That's what I like about God of War. You just fight massive people. And it's just such a it's a spectacular work. I think it's really great. But I wish I could remember his name. Never mind. It doesn't matter. The point I was going to make is this: there are lots of girls with the tops off, and I think if I were about 14, I'd find it quite stirring in God of War. They get, you know, there's lots of boobs. Get the boobs out. It's weird. It's weirdly realistic.
Yeah, I don't know. It's creepy, isn't it? Because I never really got the people who were sexually attracted to pointy pyramid Lara Croft in the Saturn Tomb Raider. It was clearly, you know, there's not a real person.
No.
But I guess as rendering becomes more realistic, if we are prepared to accept amazing facial animation and you know, people, these characters are developing into people you can genuinely empathize with, then there may well be other emotions stirred as the Uncanny Valley is breached.
Yeah, it's not quite there.
It's
creepy. I mean, it's
not yet.
Not to the point where, like, I would actually sit and watch. The key is it's not. The key is this: it's you can get iPhone applications, right? I had one called iWobble, which Susie excruciatingly enough made me show her dad, which is where you get a picture of a woman. Actually, to be fair to the app, you can get a picture of anything. You get a picture of jelly, you can get a picture of anything you wanted, and you just set points on it, and then you shake your iPhone and the accelerometer makes the thing wobble, but it looks very organic and natural.
Let's not be fair to the app though, because the app's image in the app store is a woman in a bikini.
I know. Well, so, I said this when I was showing Susie's dad. He was going, "Ooh, that's very clever." And he said, "So is it just has pictures?" And I said, "No, you put your own pictures." And he went, "Oh, so you could make jelly wobble." And I just thought, "God,
that's so quite lovely."
I wish that I there was jelly on the screen now between me and my future father-in-law, rather than the woman's knockers bouncing around. It's very. He comes from a more innocent time, clearly.
I don't think he's ready for that jelly.
The way that works is very natural and fluid, and it looks quite realistic. And in God of War, it's not that there are no sharp edges and that everything looks perfect, although the graphics are very good. It's that they've got that wobbleness in the boobs. wobbleness in the boobs, and once you got wobbleness in boobs, you know you're most of the way there, really.
Dead or Alive made big strides in that area, if maybe slightly excessive ones.
Yeah, it was. But it's weird. I was just watching it. I think this is it. These are boobs. You know, we're at a point now where if someone comes in, and it wasn't like the game wasn't making a big deal of them. The woman just happened to be topless. You know
yeah.
I mean? It's not like in GTA you can go and get you can see boobs in that because you go to a strip club and a woman strips for you. It looks rubbish, but it's overtly sexual. Like the whole point of it is the boobs. In God of War, the boobs are just there on a woman.
Well, yeah, it's Greek. Greek times.
Yeah. So that was
bring them back.
That was incredible. I enjoyed that. As I was explaining to Ben before, though, I had a frustrating evening last night because Susie was supposed to be doing night shift. Yeah, because she works night shift. I was thinking this is going to be good. She got a bit of sleep before she was going to go off at 9:30. She was getting a bit of sleep before she went off. So I got to play between about 7 and 8, I think. Got about an hour in. I was thinking, well, you know, this is just the hors d'oeuvre, though, because she's going to get up and then she's going to go off to work and I'm just going to play this game now. Maybe even beat it tonight. And then she got up and said, I don't feel well, I'm not going to work. Just sat there hogging the TV all night.
What a selfish... Oh.
Furious.
It's disgusting.
I was livid.
Although it's a bit worrying that, you know, we're maybe also getting to the point where it's more appealing to spend time with realistically rendered wobbly boobs rather than actual real boobs.
That literally...
You were hoping the real boobs would go to work so that you could look at... rendered ones.
Basically, well, the rendered boobs wasn't the point of it. What I wanted to do is just kill loads of people with my massive swords. That actually happened.
It's all getting a bit Freudian now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, let's move on. I have been playing an iPad game, which I've already talked about, Virtual Pool HD. It is fantastic. If you have an iPad, if you've just got an iPad today, you're looking for games to buy. Obviously, there are some things like Mirror's Edge, which you should definitely buy, even though it's quite expensive. There are a few apps that you really need to get for your iPad. Mirror's Edge is probably the best game, but Virtual Pool Mobile, if you're at all interested in pool, is excellent. It's made for being played on this. And let me tell you why. If you are interested in pool, then you'll know that the pleasure of playing pool, you don't necessarily even want to play other people. Like, certainly in my case, I'm more happy just to be on a pool table on my own all day, just playing against myself. Not against myself, just to see how many balls I can pot. And the pleasure is in being able to manipulate the balls with the cue. Like, it's a physical, it's like being at one with the table, like it is in any kind of sport, I guess. It's going into the zone and having that kind of weird control over something that wouldn't seem possible, like at the outset kind of thing. It's true of video games, it's true of sports. It's looking at something and thinking, how the hell is that happening? How the hell is he doing that? How's that guy doing all those keepy uppies? How's that snooker player getting the ball to land exactly where he wants across a 12-foot table using back and side spin? And it seems impossible, and then you play it and you get better and better, and then you have that mastery yourself. That's the pleasure in pool. Virtual Pool has that. Like, it's the way it's played is it's so kind of fluid and flowing. As a pool game, I think there are pool games that, like Archer MacLean's Pool on the Amiga, for example, is a game which works on completely different principles. It's very rigid, and arguably it's a better game. Certainly when I play Archer MacLean's Pool, it makes me a better pool player in real life, and Virtual Pool never did. But Virtual Pool, is what it does is it captures the kind of fluid, organic elements of pool really well. So it's great from that point of view. What I do is, there's a competition mode where you play people and you have to bet, and you sort of work your way up the ladder, earning money from bets, which empower you to challenge other people. And you kind of work your way through a kind of single-player campaign in that way, unlocking new kind of backgrounds, environments to play in. You can do it like that if competitive pool is your thing. But what I've done, and there are lots of modes, incidentally. I'll go through them now. It might be useful. Lots of different kinds of pool you can play, and they are... come on. Oh, at the moment it's just saying 10 ball rotation and straight because I've got it upright. 6 ball, 8 ball, 9 ball, 10 ball rotation and straight. Straight, you just play against yourself, and that's the mode I always play. So I just set it up and just knock balls around on the iPad, and it's just fabulous. It's just so the screen is just the right size, the controls are perfect. It feels like behind the screen something physical is happening. It's not just a game with inputs. It feels really organic. So I am a big fan of it. My only complaints would be that it is a bit So on the screen, you've got the way you queue is you touch the queue on the screen, pull it back, and slide it forward with your finger. So it's very immediate and automatic. However, I'm not sure how they would get around this, but to impart spin, which is crucial, is as important as queuing the ball, basically. If you don't use spin to kind of manipulate where the ball's going to end up after you've taken a shot, then you're not really playing pool. And to get the spin on, you've actually got to press a button at the bottom of the screen to adjust the spin. Then you adjust it, and then you click it off, and then you take your shot. And that's in such a otherwise fluid game, that's an extra step that feels like a bit of a chore. And you find yourself, when you're just kind of chilling out and playing it, you find yourself not doing that as much as you should, because you don't want to slip out of just the manipulation of the cue. You don't want to press the separate button and do that. So that's my only criticism of it, is I don't like how the spin mechanic works. But it's fantastic, though. If you bought an iPad today and you're at all interested in pool, then this is a compulsory purchase. Virtual Pool HD. It's great.
There we go. From realistically rendered breasts to realistically rendered balls.
Indeed. And I also
played... That's a good cue, wasn't it? It would have been a good cue.
Just walk away.
I can't. I'm trapped.
And also, I've played that Aurify game. I was intrigued when I read the press release, and I thought, that's
intriguing. Tell me about this Aurify. I hate pool, as much as that sounds like an enjoyable experience. Aurify, I'm very excited by.
You hate pool?
Yeah. Well, I hate pool games, really.
That's disappointing.
Well, this is why you're 80% man and I'm the 20% in our collective.
I guess, yeah. Being. So that's that's fine. Never mind. Aurify, you like sounds, though. I know that.
I do. I love sounds. Yeah. Sounds, one of my favourite things.
So there's this game, Aurify. So I was intrigued when I read the press release, so I downloaded it. So the way it works is this. You have to play it with your headphones on. That's very important. You can basically play it with your eyes closed. On the screen, there is this kind of prompt, which, as you tilt your iPhone, it tells you, when you're centered, kind of either vertically or horizontally. So you can look at that, and that's useful if you want an extra cue just to let you know that when it's telling you to kind of center the iPhone, you're actually doing it. But you don't need to use that cue. And in fact, I played it with my eyes closed. And what you do is a woman's voice comes on, a kind of husky woman's voice, and says, tilt the iPhone left to make the sound go left. And so you do. And there's this tune kind of playing in the background, like drums and I don't know what kind of music it is, drum and bass, trance or something like that. It's kind of going dooch, 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 dooch. And there's like other sounds that come in and go, and you tilt and they go across to the left. And then you tilt the other way, and they go to the right. And then it says, okay, and now tap out a beat. So you tap the screen, and it'll go boof, boof, boof. So things like that happen, basically. That gives you an idea of the way the game works. And it's sitting there with your eyes closed, kind of tilting and hearing the sound slosh from left to right is really nice and meditative, and it works very well. And what wasn't mentioned in the press release, but which strikes me as an important feature of this, is that it's very accessible if you're blind. This is a game that a blind gamer can play, and it does work. It works in the it feels very much like playing a rhythm action game, like any other rhythm action game. And it's weird that you find yourself responding to these things and doing things right or wrong without even looking at them. It's a funny experience. The problems with it are that the input isn't instant enough, so that when you do have to drum the screen, you tap the screen and then like half a second later it goes bah, do do do.
Might that be something to do with you running it on? Were you running it on iPad or iPod Touch?
So.
Oh, okay. Because maybe it would be better on the 3GS.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Could be, or maybe I'll try it on
iPad. Download it.
Yeah, download it and have a look if you like. It's a very interesting thing to look at anyway, but I suspect, because it's not a particularly doesn't seem like a particularly graphically demanding game, and I suspect that it is not because it was an iPod Touch. I suspect that it is just because that's just how it is. But I hope not. I hope it does turn out to be good on other platforms, because it's interesting. So you drop the screen. Oh dear. But that's an introductory price, actually. It's going to go up at some point as well. It's very frustrating. But what the problem is, and this is another reason why I suspect that it won't be resolved on other platforms, because it tells you to drum, and so you drum, and you're supposed to drum in time, but clearly when you drum, it's not in time, because it's behind, and it's very difficult to, like, I tried to kind of anticipate so that it sounded like it was in time, but my finger was hitting slightly early, which, you know, is potentially doable, but it's very, intuitively, it's very kind of unfulfilling. It doesn't feel right, because music is one of those things that you want to be in time, and you want to do everything right. And when you're forced to not do it in time, or when you're doing it in time, but then the sound sounds all wrong and cacophonous.
As a fellow guitarist, you'll understand this example then, because I had the same problem when I'm playing a song and I want to get that kind of violin cello type sound. So you've got your delay pedal, hit it on. You do a strum, and then you've got the volume down low, and you pull it back in. But you've got a strum before the beat to pull the sound back in, so it kind of goes where you want it to be, and it's really unintuitive. And I always get really annoyed. So it sounds like it's going to be like that.
Yeah. The other thing is you shake your iPod Touch like a maraca as well, and it's supposed to go chick, 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 chick. And again, it's supposed to be in rhythm, but it doesn't. You shake it. So here's the rhythm of me shaking is this. That's my hands going back and forth. But the sound that comes out is. It's like really unresponsive. So again, it's just.
Or interesting beat, though.
It doesn't fail you for it. The game doesn't say, oh no, you fucked that up. That's not in time. It passes you, which is what leads me to believe that it probably is just a feature of the game, that it's enough just that you're shaking, but it's unsatisfactory. It just doesn't feel nice, the way it doesn't doesn't come across in time in sound. And this would, I guess, you and I are both musicians. I suspect that you would feel the same way about it if you were playing it. Maybe someone who was less interested in music. Some people, like Susie, for example, is not. When she listens to a song, she just hears the lyrics. She never remembers the tune, and I don't think she's particularly musically inclined. Maybe it wouldn't bother her that much. And if you're not someone who gets annoyed by cacophony or arrhythmia, then these things perhaps will bother you less. But I found it quite jarring. But that said, it doesn't stop you progressing in the game. So in gameplay terms, it's not really a problem, and it's a fascinating game. It's a game you really can play it with your eyes closed, and it just works on. Like there are points where it says, "Okay, so here's the sound coming down low," and you'll just hear it low down in your ears, like physically low down, more towards your feet, and then it'll go and here's the sound playing high, and it'll be up above your head. So. Obviously, earphones are quite clever, and they can make sound appear in different places in your head, and it's all very interesting. But it has problems. So that's that. Those are the games we've been playing. All quite interesting, I think.
Yeah.
How do you think it's gone then? We've done a two-person podcast without the.
I think it's been better than any podcast ever.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, absolutely, and or radio show or even television broadcast.
This is where I was going next. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but we have been at it for quite a long time, so let's clock off. Go to pocketgamer.co.uk. You can read all about games like Aurify and everything else that comes out between now and the next podcast. Go to iTunes and give us a rating. And aside from that, next week we'll have Tracy and Alex back. Sorry about the banging in the background if you can hear that, but there you are. It just happens. And also, if you are reading the site, sorry about all the strange symbols that you might be seeing in the stories. Nobody knows why they're there.
It's Braille. We're introducing Braille to the site.
Yeah, and also the site is haunted by blind ghosts.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a problem. Nobody likes a blind ghost. So that's an issue. So it's the end of the podcast. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.